episode 801 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Washington Heights, and, it is kind of hard to say goodbye to some people sometimes.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and, you know, the good shows were really good, and the bad shows were really bad. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure where I go. I'm all over the place.
All over the map, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. That being said, the shows did only range from 7 to 9. So it is average, but it could be said that it was a little bit dreadfully average, especially considering the shows that wound up at the bottom of the list, not the ones we're usually we're used to talking about. But at any rate, yes, we are back for this week's episodic discussion. And this is the slate of shows, 19 shows this time around, that aired up to the 18th of April or so. So, before we go into any further details, someone's here to give the spoiler disclaimer.
Yes, let's see if I can remember this.
let's see.
We will, as ever, talk about whatever we feel like talking about, including vital details and discussions and about these episodes. So if you haven't seen them, you'll be spoiled.
There you go. Good enough, because we want to jump into this. yes, so as usual, what we do is that we do the bottom three, then the top three, and then we kind of cherry pick the rest before wrapping everything up at the end. So we are going to, I have a feeling these ones at the bottom are going to get a little bit of attention. Again, surprisingly, these are the ones that are at the bottom, and they are not the shows that we typically think of when we think of the usual suspects. But we're going to start here with Class, Season 1, Episode 1. I should say Series 1, Episode 1. For tonight, we must die. How appropriate. The Doctor entrusts 4 students at Coal Hill Academy with protecting the Earth from sinister forces. Is that what happened in this episode?
I thought it was
a little different. This came in at an average of 7.25, and this is the latest spinoff of Doctor Who, taking place at it would have been the school or the academy now, that it has kind of been name-checked since, the very first episode? So, it's got a history, but yeah, this was this originally aired last year in the UK, and has finally come over here to run concurrently with the current season of Doctor Who. And yeah, Gary, you seem to have felt that this was pretty average.
Yes, I treated it as we generously treat pilots, because that's what I felt this was, even though it didn't actually have that title. It was really rough. There's a lot of, world establishing, as well as a lot of character establishing, and it went really slow. And when it did happen, it was quite painful in appearance. And but the story itself wasn't horrible, so I gave it a reasonable score. I gave it a 7, and I think there's room for potential. Most of the actors seemed extremely wooden, stiff, and I really don't feel I got any real character separation, especially among most of the students. And so I'm hoping as the episodes peel out, they'll start to come into their own and be unique individuals. But I really didn't have that sense with this. Also, since when can't the Doctor close a rift? I really don't get it. Why is he now putting students in charge of guarding this thing? I just don't get it. Doesn't UNIT have anybody to send? Just a thought. So, John, you thought a little bit more of it than I did, and I realized this is a pilot, and we are usually we try to be as generous as possible when it comes to first episodes because of all the establishing that has to happen. So that being said, perhaps I was overcritical. What'd you like about it, John?
Miss Quill. That's maybe the slight half point more. I like her attitude. So, anyone who's that bloodthirsty, that's a semi faculty or administration at a school, has got to be fun. And I guess the fact that it did try to make this kind of fusion between Doctor Who's universe and a neo-Buffy type of attitude. I mean, all the pop culture references, I was even impressed that they threw in a Vampire Diaries
Yes, yeah,
comment
yeah,
that, in there, which actually was a really on point comment. So I was laughing at that one. I enjoyed those moments. I enjoyed moments, in fact. It was the whole that didn't really work for me. The premise doesn't really make sense. I thought that they overdid the premise, actually. They didn't need to have a huge mythology for this series. It's the school that Clara used to work at. It's the school that, you know, Ian and Barbara used to work at. It's the school that the Doctor has been around more times than we can count over the years. Does it need to have a huge, like, setup for there to be weird things going on? I don't know that it did. And especially when those weird things are kind of poorly explained. So I think they overshot. And at the end of the day, that just made it feel kind of hollow. In fact, one set of comments that I read at one point was saying that everybody knew that the Doctor was going to be there at some point in the episode. And so watching the show, you just wait for him to show up. You don't really, it's like, yeah, they would have done much better if they had just either had him come in at the very start and get the ball rolling or not involve him at all. But yeah, I guess they felt like they needed to have some kind of name recognition. I know that it's kind of a side project thing, and this is kind of somebody coming in from the outside saying, let me play in the sandbox. But yeah, as a start, it was just meh. I hope that they do better with the second episode. I'll just leave it at that. Surprisingly, though, that episode, that premiere, outscored our next episode, which is Doctor Who, Series 10, Episode 1, the pilot.
Really?
Anyway, in the season premiere, two worlds collide when the Doctor meets Bill Potts, and a chance encounter with a girl with a star in her eye leads to a chase across time and space. This came in at an average of 7.17. Okay. And yeah, we did have a little bit more distance between our scores on this one, although you guys seem to be a little harsher on it than I did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Edmund, why don't you start us off on this one? What were your thoughts? You gave this one a dead solid average 7.
Yeah, so. I mean, a dead average 7. I mean, I thought for, in terms of in the introducing Bill Potts as the new companion, they did a bit of a perfunctory job with that, there's always kind of the issue with these things of with these new companions of coming up with reasons for them to take on this new adventure, I did like her being that curious and sitting in on the Doctor's lectures and showing that willingness or eagerness to take on new things. It still, you know, they did not seem to be doing a very good job of giving us her background, and really introducing us to the character, the other thing that really kept it down for me, I kind of felt this after, you know, from the Christmas special as well. I mean, when Nardole was first introduced, but I'm really not sure about this sort of sidekick buddy act that they're bringing in with having this sort of arch, wink, wink commentary going on. We will have to see, I think, as it plays out, see how the dynamics and chemistry, really work with this new team.
I think you put your finger right on it, that even though I gave this a higher score, that was one of my reservations about this, is that I feel like for the fact that they literally name check in the title of the episode, the pilot, that this is a kind of new start, new companion, a completely different kind of companion that they've had for a while, where it's someone that is highly unlikely to be fawning over the Doctor some of the companions, even the ones that I like, some of the companions that tend to do, especially in the Moffat era. And yet I came out of this hour not knowing nearly enough about the new person. I was like, okay, it's great. You know, they went really good in really good directions with the whole diversity thing here. But I actually felt like that Moffat kind of put his foot in his mouth with that, because it's like, okay, so, you know, we have someone who is, you know, we have a lesbian character, very out, very open about that fact, and kind of falls in love in 10 seconds. That's weird. Okay. And not only that, but this person that you just got introduced to is interested in someone that they apparently just met. And yet by the end of the episode, you're supposed to buy the fact that they are so involved with each other that there would be like massive consequences over that relationship. So that I was going to like, really? That didn't sell. You didn't sell me on that. If it wasn't for the fact that I already really liked the 12th Doctor, this could be very problematic for me. And I'm wondering, Gary, is that are those factors that played into it for you?
Well, you know, I've had issues with Capaldi from the beginning, and okay. I realize that I do. So I tried to put that aside and look at, you know, try to focus on the new companion a little bit, their interaction. And but yeah, I don't feel I really got a good understanding of the new companion. I felt like I missed an episode. As this opened, I felt like they have already been talking and working together for some time, and I didn't see it. Which was not quite frustrating, but I felt that something had already gone on between the two, and I just missed it. And they were moving forward. Personally, I think the two actors actually do interact very well. I felt the storyline was a bit weak, and if we had put it together with any other doctor or any other companion, I think this still would have been a very poor story. I don't think necessarily the new companion is this the sole reason for my score. But that being said, the companions and the doctor always seem to groove from the very beginning, and I did have a sense of that, but it was the whole rest of the episode that just bombed for me. Jeez, what's the right word I'm looking for? The egregious use of Daleks in this episode.
Oh, yes.
For a stunt villain? I don't even know what the cameo.
In my review, I basically said almost exactly that. That it was completely unnecessary, and it felt like a stunt just to because they felt like they had to have something recognizable at the beginning.
Yes, and my mouth just dropped open. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe they bothered to do that. You know, I could think of a million different people they should have on other than a Dalek. Anyway, and just walk past them pretty much. And oh, gee.
Could you imagine if they had spent that time that they spent doing that little side venture into the Dalek land, which granted did have some, you know, connections to the Fourth Doctor era. So it was nice to see the continuity there. But if they had taken that time to develop the relationship between Bill and Heather more, that might have solved one of the other problems.
Yeah, I would have rather seen a scene with them both drinking coffee for a minute.
yeah, it kind of went over the top with that.
So this was just weak in a lot of ways that they felt they were trying. It's like they wanted to do well and they just could not like get the engine running. It was just poor. And given that this is basically the same team that has been working this since the previous season as well, it's a little less forgivable for the first episode of a season. It's not like we've gotten a new production crew or anything like that. These are all the same people with writing the same characters for the most part, and they should have done a better job. I get this sense like they don't care about Capaldi anymore. With all the talk about the next Doctor, it's like they want to shoo him off. At least that's my feel.
If you want to get into that topic sometime, I think I've mentioned many times that in recent years, especially the way that Doctor Who has been reported is just makes it so difficult to enjoy the current material on the screen, because they're so often talking about what's coming next, that you get wrapped up in the drama of it.
Yeah.
And they don't do I should say, because last season I think they did a nice job of kind of using it to their strength. But yeah, it's distracting, because now series 9, it was all about how are they going to write out Clara? And did they, like I said, they used it to their advantage, because they actually made the story about ruminating over her impending demise. But now this season, you know, series, before you even see anything on screen, it's all about this is his last go. You know, the chances are that everything about the current season is going to be wiped clean at the end, because they want to have a clean slate for the next showrunner and so on. And it's like, I'd rather not know that at this point. I really would. Because it's been happening since really early on in the revival. Because I was going to say even like early on in the Matt Smith period, but it was even before that, because you knew way too much about what was going on with the 10th Doctor. And every single time that there was like a change to the airing format and so on, it just, anyway, it gets irritating. Like you said, even if that wasn't the case, Gary, I think that it would be hard. You'd be hard pressed not to feel that way based on the way that the reporting is pushing. Mm. Edmund, any other thoughts on the Doctor Who?
No, I mean, I think, certainly, I mean, as far as the sort of the deficiencies of the story, and, I think you've covered that pretty well. I mean, I certainly, it did seem odd, this whole thing of making this, this magical sort of love at first sight relationship, trying to spin that into this, universe shattering thing by the end, seemed a very odd way to go, when you could have, maybe had them, had it be her longtime girlfriend, if you really wanted to establish the character, and not this, sudden crush instead.
Yeah, I think that it was just a poorly conceived combination at that point. And it really just feeds into a lot of the criticism that Moffat doesn't seem to understand certain characters very well. But at any rate, right now, at least, my favorable rating or score on this one had a lot to do with Capaldi, and I know that you have a very different take or opinion of that, Gary, so I have a feeling that there's going to be where I feel like an episode is being carried by Capaldi. If you are not really enjoying him as the Doctor, that could be a real problem for you. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Whistle past the graveyard on that one. You may be looking forward to some of those news items about the next.
Yes, I am.
But before, we can get out of the bottom three here. I'm just going to very briefly say that Prison Break, Season 5, Episode 3, The Liar, when T-Bag ambushes Sarah, he warns her that two of Poseidon's henchmen, Van Gogh and A&W, may be following her. The fact that I read that description and I only have a very vague idea what they're talking about tells you how engaged I was in the episode. And I continue to say that, man, I really like this cast. I really like the fact that they decided to bring it back, just in concept anyway. It's great to see these guys playing together in the sandbox again. But boy, does this story need a shot of adrenaline right now. all that energy from like the first two seasons of Prison Break is non-existent. Get moving, people, because you're killing your momentum here. All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to the top three, which I think is going to be a much happier discussion overall. Well, maybe not the matter in discussion in the episodes, but happy on our end. We're going to start here with that ever-uplifting number three selection, The Leftovers, Season 3, Episode 1, The Book of Kevin. Season 3 begins 3 years after the guilty remnant descended on Miracle, Texas, where Kevin is now chief of police, a job that isn't made any easier by the fact that the 7th anniversary of the sudden departure is 2 weeks away, and many citizens are convinced that another apocalyptic event is in the offing. And this got a score of 8.5. It beat out a couple other contenders by being the show that had the most scores at that level. So, yeah, as I say in my comment here, and the meditation on the abyss continues. though I have to say, this didn't feel nearly as grueling as some of the second season did. And I say grueling in the best possible sense, because The Leftovers was that show that I looked forward to every week, despite the fact I knew it was going to hurt.
Yes, indeed.
It still is, but man, I was just fascinated by some of the character and plot beats. and they released the premiere of the third season on Easter Sunday.
Yes.
Which, if you watch the show,
so
blasphemous,
just slightly tongue in cheek there. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Not to mention titling it The Book of Kevin. So
yes, right.
but you certainly got this, a sense of sort of all these characters, after all that they've gone through, and certainly that sort of meat grinder of a season, all those events of now 3 years ago, that they They all seem to have found some sort of accommodation with things, and you really got a sense that they've settled into life in Miracle, just on the surface, the whole thing of Kevin, back working as a policeman. Matt having found a congregation again, and of course his wife being back among the living, so there's almost a sense of normalcy, or as normal as things get in this strange world where these odd things have been happening, of course I assume that's just I'm sure some false sense of normality, which will be twisted and turned and taken in strange ways that we don't expect, because that's the way this show has gone, and especially now that we know this is the final go round. I'm sure they've got some quirks to toss at us.
Oh, definitely. And my last comment, I guess, or my other comment here is that, given the way that Kevin's story went in the second season and just overall, is it really that unreasonable for someone like Matt to write a gospel about it?
I mean, yes.
It's like Kevin could sit down with the Winchesters and be like, yeah, okay. We got a few things we could talk about. All right. Our number two show for the week is one that has been a solid deliverer all this season, and that is The Expanse, Season 2, Episode 12, The Monster and the Rocket. A discovery pushes Naomi and Holden apart and sets the Rossi crew against each other. Boy, that's kind of glossing over some things. Anyway, that one came in at an average of 8.83. And yeah, wow, this season of The Expanse. Whew. We could make this a whole discussion. We could probably have an entire episode discussing just The Expanse at some point. But, yeah, Gary, your highlights for this episode.
Oh, geez. Let's see. Let's come up with some. The fact that a member of the Resante crew actually gave away the proto-molecule. That just shocked the heck out of me for the ending. I just sat there with my mouth open and knowing that, was it Ben Johnson? Is that it? Is that his name?
Fred Johnson.
Let's remember which one
Fred
you're
Johnson,
watching
Fred.
Here.
Yes, I think
you're talking the finale, I think.
Oh, am I? Oh,
yes.
Geez, okay, let me back up.
penultimate episode.
Darn, I hate when I get ahead. As we're discovering the, they're trying to track down the creature in the dome.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was really amazed. It shocked me that they brought the Rosinte in there and were carving, like, turning, spinning, going up, down, all over the place inside the dome. I really just thought they'd just blast the heck out of it instead of going into there. That surprised that bit of maneuvering was a bit of a surprise for me. Also, as they opened up the larger conspiracy with the children being taken away, and we're going through the labs to get to through the different rooms, and we're getting the flashbacks from, I guess, the daughter, and that was interesting that this, we get that aspect of it actually on Ganymede with the children. Then we're getting this whole other aspect on, Earth, as they're talking about, that they have the program with the protomatter from the ambassador, I guess he is. And that it's, something that is happening, that it's not guessed at or hinted at now. It's pretty wide open and exposed, at least in the higher levels, that all this stuff is going on and, what a mess it is. And we still have the, Earth ship over Venus to try and analyze this, and the probes don't quite want to go through, and they keep burning up as they're heading them down. So we're trying to figure out what's going on there as well. So they've really, are introducing so many questions going forward with this, not to mention this whole Earth-Mars war that's just teetering on the brink, it seems, as a result of all this. It's a lot of tension they're building up, and they're building it up on so many different fronts. If you don't like one, you can easily dive into another and be perfectly well satisfied. So I think they're doing a great job with with A, B, and C plot development all simultaneously, and it's not an easy thing to pull off, but they're managing it well, and they're keeping it compelling, and they're not just it's not just a bunch of talking heads, but we're seeing a variety of action, be it people, ships, locations. I think they're really doing a great job of juggling everything.
Yeah, Edmund, what would you add to that?
In this episode, I mean I thought the way they'd been building up the tensions on the Rossi and Holden, getting so obsessed, and seeming to finally go over that edge of being willing to do just about anything or sacrifice just about anything to get at the creature, that was quite a shocking development, but I thought as well, I mean the way they were then handling the whole refugee situation what to do with that mob outside the ship was quite an interesting development, and the way they pulled it off felt quite well earned. As Gary said, the fact they're managing to keep all of these various plots, these plates spinning in the air, and actually keeping them going, because I was quite shocked to see Vassarella, apparently outmaneuvered, or at least for now, after I can never remember his character's name, because I just think of him as Sean Doyle, after appearing to be so contrite and shunted off to the side, to have him prove to be so ruthless, throwing her words back in her face about, I'm here to protect Earth, and that's what I'm going to do, and I don't care what bad situation that puts you in. It's quite amazing how they've been able to keep all of these elements going of really good action, and the spacecraft going after the creature, wonderful effects, and at the same time juggling all these different geopolitical high drama, both among the powerful, and then how it's shaking out and affecting the poor folks trapped in the situation on the ground. Continuing the quite impressive work on this show.
Absolutely. Let's see what else there is here in my notes. As everyone's used to the fact that I'm editing episode when we're recording right before I have to put it out. The whole escape from Ganymede was really well done. I love how the stakes felt high. You felt it when people had to be counted out and there were people being left behind. I mean, that was a really strong scene. And then when the Rossi is trying to help the weeping somnambulist get out of the cordon that was in the blockade. And that whole scene was just, for a penultimate episode, this was really impressive. I just thought that it's worth mentioning that the end of this season was the one that convinced me that it was time to pick up Leviathan Wakes. So that's one of the books on that stack I was referring to a couple episodes ago.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, as the one who has read the books here, it's well worth it.
Awesome. All right, and that brings us to our number one show for the week. Yes, there was a show that edged that out, and that would be The Americans, Season 5, Episode 7, The Committee on Human Rights. As Paige becomes even more enmeshed in her parents' world, tensions with Matthew Beeman come to a head. Philip and Elizabeth's honey traps take surprising turns, and Stan faces the consequences of overplaying his hand at the FBI.
Indeed.
And no, that wasn't actually about a card game, that last part. Nice bit there. All right, and it came in at an average of 9. So, yes, this one coming in at the very top. And Edmund, you haven't been able to talk about this season of The Americans.
Yes, well, I've been trying to write extensive notes anyway. But,
that's right, but it's just not it's the not, same.
Yes.
I try to read your notes, Edmund, okay. in the cadence that I would expect to hear. It isn't the same.
It's okay. Entertainment in and of itself.
Yes, I'm sure.
It is, I'm sure.
But yeah, well, certainly, I mean, one of my reactions to this episode was feeling like, you know, okay, this is the producers in the writer's room trying to make damn sure that Frank Langella actually gets an Emmy nomination this year instead of Margo Martindale. because certainly, I mean, you know, the last couple of episodes, as Gabriel had, you know, announced he was going to be leaving, and then, you know, obviously it starts playing, really playing out in this episode as they pick up right from the end of the previous episode with Paige getting introduced to him, and then seeing the sort of pride with which he obviously has, and finally getting a chance to meet her and let her know how he feels about her parents, and his position as a father figure to them is all quite obvious. But then all leading to, you know, the Gabriel's, you know, the admission at the end that, maybe Paige really isn't cut out for this, Philip, I thought did rather well managing to restrain himself from, you know, oh, okay, now finally, you
know. Can you listen to me?
Yes. but certainly as that's been playing out, and even though she's sort of been the dutiful daughter and trying to go along with this, you know, it's been quite obvious how much of a toll it's taking on all of them, I'm rather intrigued that now that Henry is finally being brought to the fore a little bit more, what sort of complications that's going to introduce, because it seems quite obvious to me that it's been almost this inside joke about among the viewers and among the producers as well, of they have this other kid who we hardly ever see anything of, and I really do wonder just how much he has actually been picking up on that they have no idea about, and how that's going to play out, especially given how close he is to Stan. It's also rather intriguing the way their two honey traps are going along, and that rather amusing little discovery that Elizabeth's guy is a bit of a player and stepping out on her, and seeing how that as much as they try and keep focused on the job and keep clinical about it, it's hard to keep the emotions out of it, especially now that as they have become more of a couple themselves, and sort of more in touch with their feelings, between Philip and his est, and I think even Elizabeth going to the psychiatrist is she may poo-poo it, and I think unbeknownst to them, perhaps unacknowledged by them, there are greater depths of connection and emotion than they had when all this started, certainly. But what did you think, John?
Yeah, I think that I focused so much on this being the end of Gabriel's run.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently on the show, and yeah, the fact that as he's leaving, you have this big whopping issue to now deal with Paige, which has been brewing for so long. And like you said, you know, Philip, just the look on his face when it's like, I don't think Paige is cut out for this. It's just like, I said that. Why didn't you listen?
Yes.
Because it's clearly going to blow up on in everyone's face, which is unfortunate because, to be honest, though, earlier this season, Paige was actually showing some promise.
Mm-hmm.
and it's like, oh, this is not going to go well. It's like she learned just enough to be dangerous.
Yes.
Ugh. So I know that the writers have a plan because they knew well ahead of time when the show was going to end next season. So I trust that they know where they're going with this, but this feels like Philip and Elizabeth could, the timing of Gabriel walking away could not have been any worse for them. They already seemed or felt like they were overextended and struggling to try and keep it all together with all the various people that they had to juggle with all their missions and so forth. And now they're losing control of the core of their own family unit that ostensibly having Paige be involved in what they were doing would have brought them closer. And now it's the exact opposite. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the season ends.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, and in terms of what you were saying about, you know, Paige seeming to, be showing some promise, of course, even in this episode, I mean, you know, breaking up with Matthew and, is her certainly, taking charge and, aside from the fact that, you know, yes, a lot of it was born out of, you know, being unable to maintain the dual nature. But it was, actually following her mother's lead from, a number of episodes ago, you know, and she was so concerned about that relationship. So Paige, showing a little bit of that maturity, but yeah, as you say, John, you know, perhaps just, she's just picking up enough knowledge to hang herself and, maybe the rest of the family as well. Who knows?
Very possibly. Very possibly. So, yes. That's our top three for this week, which means that we have just a bit of time here left over to dig into any other episodes that are on the list that we might want to tackle. Gary, anything that you see here on the list that is worthy of mention?
Yes, since we have a third person here tonight and we've all reviewed the show, why don't we talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Okay, if you don't mind doing the recap for me.
Sure, no problem. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Season 4, Episode 14, Episode 18, No Regrets. The truth behind Fitz's turn is revealed. Wow. Boy, just, you know, with detailed writing like that, I don't know much more there is to say.
The AMC recappers need to work too.
Fair enough. Well, I guess I'll jump in with address the recap. We find out what's changed in Fitz's life to make him from lovey-dovey with Simmons to the number two cruelest person on the earth. We find out that it's his father. His father did not die and continued to be a bad influence on Fitz. So, so we see that. We also see May get superpowers, or at least for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
We see the Patriot supposedly, at least from what it shows, sacrifice himself to not only save S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, but also to save May as well and several children. I like the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D., even in this drone heavy report and police state, are still able to actually carry out operations and have a reasonable chance of getting away. I like that we got to see yet another S.H.I.E.L.D. agent come out of the cracks, Trip, we get to see. I'm enjoying the fact that the team is coming together. I love the friction with Ward and Skye. They obviously were, I guess, lovers or at least involved in some way prior to Skye going into the Matrix or framework. Sorry, framework. I'm not allowed to say Matrix. Yes, that would be wrong. And the friction that she sort of grumbles back and forth and mutters things that, you know, he's just out of earshot for. And I like that a lot. It's not that we can necessarily give Ward his comeuppance that he deserves. It's nice for him to get these little pinpricks, so to speak. We have daring adventure, sacrifice, possible redemption in the case of May. I'm not sure. Possibly. We get explanations for what happened for Fitz. We see that we get some hint that there might be a way out of the framework, but we don't get any details on that. there's a lot of stuff happening here, and I feel like it's coming together in a very organic, comfortable manner that I'm enjoying watching. Obviously this didn't rank in the top three, but it still came up with a respectable score of 8.17. So I think that in general we all did enjoy this. Edmund, was there a particular point that you enjoyed or disliked?
Well, just in general, I mean, I've been really liking this sort of alternate reality that they've set up here. I think I said in one of my notes for one of the previous episodes. I mean, there's this whole idea of shows that get to create alternate universes. Fringe being the prime example, giving the characters and the actors as well, playing them. This opportunity to try out different versions. Different take they've done on it here, I think, has been a lot of fun. Fitz has been kind of the centerpiece of this, but I've been really enjoying this whole idea of Coulson as a slightly nutty conspiracy theorist precisely because he did have these some inklings of that something wasn't quite right, throwing in the stuff about the soap and certainly the way Sky's been reacting. Because she realizes, wait a minute, this guy isn't isn't quite the Phil, the Phil we know and love, has been a lot of fun, as you say, they're doing a good job of sort of slowly bringing the team back together, giving us some little inklings and hope that they will figure out a way out of this that feels like it's going to be relatively well earned.
Yeah, I believe it will, and I still feel as though there is an underlying sense that they may feel like this is the end of the line.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, this is probably as good a way to do it. It brings things full circle in a lot of respects. And they managed to take a character like the Patriot, who has only been around this season, and make his passing fairly poignant, given everything else that happens in the episode. So, and I think that it also was used very effectively to set the stakes of what's going on, because you took a character that, and let's face it, expendable, even if it was hard to see him go, and we learned that if you die in the framework, as one would expect, you die in real life. So now the stakes are much higher for the other characters, and if I were Ward, I'd be very worried, because what is he doing in there? Anyway. I think that this has just been a really good arc, final arc for the season, and if it turns out to be the final arc for the series, because as of this past week, there is still no word on a decision for another season.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if it is the end, then it's actually a fairly good end, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Edmund, anything else here on the list that you would like to quickly jump into or give a few thoughts on?
Well, the one other show I did actually watch almost made it into the top three was the Better Call Saul, the second episode of this third season, the main thing here is as has been heralded in the trailers for the season, this was when Gus Fring has returned, a major moment for all of us Breaking Bad fans, was handled quite nicely, Mike and Jim Jimmy, you know, are now finally getting back into each other's orbit. You know, they were on staying on these separate paths for the first episode, but now Mike is roping Jimmy back in, and which is especially now that Gus is in the picture, is you know, I'm sure going to create all sorts of interesting complications. That as you know, as the we get introduced to the presumably will be the early the beginnings of the Gus Fring drug empire.
So your thoughts so far of this season are pretty favorable?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah, you never know with these shows whether or not it's going to continue to live up to those expectations, especially this being a spinoff.
So. Yeah, but certainly, I mean, you know, I mean, even though I'm not, you know, that Gus's return was certainly sort of the, you know, the big takeaway from this episode. But at the same time, I mean, the ongoing relationships between Jimmy and Kim and his brother, you know, has been really well defined, and you know, and is very interesting as well. You know, this show has become far more than just you know, a spinoff and prequel to Breaking Bad.
And that's probably the ideal situation, right? I mean, the fact that you almost could enjoy this and find it to be of that high quality, even if you had never seen even one episode of Breaking Bad. It does it stand on its own that strongly?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, good, good. All right. Well, I think then we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up, which means that we're going to go down the list of the shows that we did not talk about and give some quick scores. Elementary season 5 episode 19, High Heat, came in at an 8.5, so in a tie for the third place there. The Originals season, or excuse me, Riverdale season 1 episode 10, The Lost Weekend, came in at an 8.25. Good strong episode there. The Originals season 4 episode 5, I Hear You Knocking, got an 8. Into the Badlands season 2 episode 5, Monkey Leaps Through Mist, came in at an 8. Outcast season 2 episode 3, Not My Job to Judge, got an 8, as did iZombie season 3 episode 3, Eat, Pray, Live. The Magician season 2 episode 12, Ramifications, got a 7.5. Designated Survivor season 1 episode 16, Party Lines, got a 7.5. Supernatural season 12 episode 18, The Memory Remains, got a 7.5. Iron Fist season 1 episode 5, Underleaf Pluck Lotus. Wow, okay. Also, got a 7.5, which, as some people may know, is actually a fairly impressive score so far for Iron Fist. And finally, 24 Legacy, Season 10, Episode 12, 11 p.m. to 12 a.m., got a 7.5. And so, just a note on that Iron Fist episode, I have to say that this was actually, in my opinion, not a bad episode of the show. If only the rest of the series were like that. Just leave it at that, I guess. Okay, we are wrapping up for the week. Edmund, any last thoughts before we wrap up here?
Well, it was a lot of fun to come back and do a little bit of this again. And, you know, as I will see if it's possible to maybe pop up every now and then. And other than that, I will certainly leave you some notes to try and properly cadence.
I will give it my best shot. And obviously, always welcome anytime to come back. That is the open door policy that you should take advantage of whenever you can.
Okay, excellent.
And Gary, any last thoughts on your end? No?
Yes. Yeah, it's nice that the shows that we've come to expect to be of a higher caliber, such as, you know, The Expanse and The Americans, are keeping their quality up. It's not uncommon that we found there all of a sudden something that's in the top 3 one week is down in the bottom next week, and that's always sort of frustrating for me that the shows don't keep up their consistent quality. So it's nice to see that this week it looks like they did.
Indeed, it does seem that way. I'm hoping, though, that Doctor Who can kind of rise out of its current status this week. It's a little disappointing to see it starting off on such a rough start. But yes, we're going to go ahead and wrap up then. just as a programming note, since the podcast has caught up with the airing schedule on the VOG network, it's worth noting that next weekend, it's a pretty high possibility that we will not be recording, so we may be taking the week off again. I will be away, and I'm not sure exactly when I'm getting in. So it's a 50-50 shot, let's put it that way. But Gary and I will certainly try and figure out if we can squeak it in. If not, then we may be off for a week. But probably we'll be able to communicate that on the forums over at the VOG Network as I try and keep up with that. So, all right, we're going to go ahead then, wrap up the week, and we'll see you next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.